Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai.
209 and WTMJ, Greg and Jessica with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon, and some warmer temperatures, but be mindful of what's going to happen here this weekend. We got some snow expected to be in the forecast, 1 to 3 inches possible, and that could make for an interesting commute or wherever you're driving around. Might make for an interesting football game as well in Chicago if they're getting a piece of that.
I'm also thinking it might make for a lovely Saturday night if we have snow on the ground and then you can be cozied up at home watching the Packers win.
I love that idea. 209 here on WTMJ.
Here's your top two at two on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Number one, new details today about the ICE officer who fatally shot a 37-year-old mother of three on a street in Minneapolis. Renee Nicole Good was shot and killed yesterday. A senior official at the Department of Homeland Security tells CBS News the ICE agent who shot Good was involved in another incident just last year.
The ICE agent who shot and killed Renee Goodman is a member of ICE's Special Response Team. Now, that's a tactical unit that's used in high-risk operations. We're told the agent is Minneapolis-based, has more than 10 years on the job, and was also involved in a separate use of force incident during a traffic stop last June.
Homeland Security officials and President Trump say the ICE agent acted in self-defense, but eyewitness accounts and assessments from the Minneapolis mayor and Minnesota governor say that claim is false.
After a one-day pause in the proceedings, testimony resumes today in the trial of an ex-police officer charged with endangering the lives of children during the 2022 school massacre in Uvalde, Texas.
On Tuesday, a former Robb Elementary School teacher testified about seeing a man walking toward the building and firing a rifle. Adrian Gonzalez's attorney said the prosecution had withheld that information and moved for a mistrial. On Wednesday, Judge Sid Harrell ruled.
I'm going to deny the motion for mistrial.
Harrell may ask the jury to disregard the former teacher's testimony, but defense lawyer Jeff Goss says,
I think a lot of that testimony, though, is going to be difficult for them to disregard.
In all, the state plans to call about 60 witnesses. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
Gonzalez faces 29 felony counts of abandoning or endangering a child in relation to his response to the shooting. He faces up to 2 years in prison if convicted. He's one of only two law enforcement officials, or officers, I should say, criminally charged for the response to the shooting. Former Uvalde Police Chief Pete Arredondo also charged, but his trial date has not been set. It's 2:11 on WTMJ. Two 15ish on a Thursday, not our usual check-in time with CBS congressional correspondent Scott McFarland, but we're happy to have him each and every week here on the program. Scott joining us from the nation's capital. Hey, Scott.
Hey, good afternoon. Good to be here. And that is high five quality time.
High five.
I got nothing on that.
Scott, you continue to impress me. I know I at least have heard of a lot of these. I don't feel like I've even heard of high five.
Well, I mean, some of them have passed, so they don't really make music anymore, but they were big if you were in the prom season in the early 90s.
Okay, prom season in the early 90s. I guess I would have been a little bit later in that. Well, Scott, one of the biggest stories, in fact, you could say the biggest story across the country right now, is the ICE agent killing a woman in Minneapolis. Governor Tim Walz ended a press conference, actually right as our show was starting about 2.5 hours ago or so. He quoted George Orwell at the end. What was his message?
The quote from George Orwell is, you know, don't believe what your eyes see. Don't believe what you've been told. It's the same quote I heard Tuesday on the anniversary of January 6th, when so many Democrats were arguing that, you know, we're told that we can't believe what our own eyes saw on January 6th, 2021. And this is one of those cases where one side's arguing the video shows you this, and the other side's arguing the video shows you that. But I think the most telling thing, Jess, is that there are sides, political sides to this killing in Minneapolis, and it really speaks to the moment we're in, doesn't it?
Is there any deviation from that in the nation's capital, Scott? We've heard from the Democratic leaders in Minnesota. We've heard from Kristi Noem, party lines being drawn, but any deviation behind the scenes in D.C.?
Not that I can see. I got to tell you, it's really pretty binary here, where you got Democrats, who, including those from Minnesota in particular, who have absolutely blasted the Trump administration for deploying ICE, blasted the ICE officer involved with the shooting, and said that everybody should go home. And that means everybody from the federal government, not the people of Minneapolis. And you got Republicans saying that this was very clearly to them an assault in a dangerous situation where the person who was shot was the one creating the danger, and that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer appears to not only followed his training and followed the rules, but tried to preserve his own life. But you have a police shooting. Sadly, if these happen in American communities semi-regularly, this one just immediately went from 0 to 60 into a political issue, and I don't see that changing.
Your colleagues over at CBS are learning new information about the ICE agent involved in this deadly shooting. What has your team discovered?
Well, there's a couple different issues here, and it's a great question. The first issue is, what's the backstory of the officer? And the other question is, where is the officer now? You know, the vice president of the United States just did a press conference and was asked, what becomes of this officer? Is this officer put on leave? Is this officer still on the job? And the officer deflected everybody to the Department of Homeland Security for an answer on that. And I suspect that when there's an officer involved shooting, there's a protocol to go through that usually involves taking the officer off the job, at least temporarily. Backstory of the officer, it's been very, very clear this officer was struck recently, relatively recently, in another law enforcement setting with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, had just gone through being struck by a vehicle, a driver of a vehicle, and that may have informed the decision that was made in Minneapolis yesterday.
So party lines have been drawn, but this ultimately falls into the FBI's world, doesn't it, Scott, to determine what went wrong and maybe who was at fault or what the intentions were?
It's going to be an FBI investigation. It's also going to be a Department of Homeland Security investigation. That's who the Immigration and Customs agents work for. The FBI handles all investigations of federal law enforcement and fatal shootings. There's an open question, though, Greg, whether the Minnesota local authorities will have a piece of this, too. And oftentimes, federal agents work in concert with the local jurisdiction when it's happening in a local community. But it appears, according to our CBS News reporting, the federal agents are not going to cooperate or do business with the local authorities. And there you have another one of those fierce political issues that is forming, where local leaders in Minnesota, including the Democratic governor, the Democratic mayor, are going to object that the Trump administration's Department of Justice is boxing them out. It really went quickly. It's a political issue here. It's a tragedy, but now it's a tragedy of political overtones that are unmistakable.
Scott, another big story coming out of D.C. where you are, the Trump administration weighing options for acquiring Greenland. How many options are there? What are our options?
All right, now there's some defections in the Republican Party on this one. If you're wondering if this is one of those traditional binary issues, this is not. There have been a number of Republican senators who, over the past 24 to 48 hours, have said specifically that whether by force or by money, they're not keen on us taking over Greenland. And there are any number of geopolitical issues here and diplomatic issues at play. The Trump administration has pushed back on this argument that they may be considering, a use of some type of military presence or some type of military leverage to get Greenland. They've been indicating they want to do it by money. But this is not an open and closed case here. I think you're going to find all kinds of constituencies that oppose this, and maybe some unique constituencies that would support it. But it feels to me like a little bit like fan fiction.
Well, how might the legal fallout from the Venezuela operation influence the U.S. and their approach to acquiring Greenland?
Well, the Venezuelan issue becomes another thorny issue for the administration, which does seem to have those traditional party lines. I mean, there's open questions about how the administration is going to maintain this type of oversight or presence in Venezuela for an indefinite period of time. And speaking to the New York Times, the president indicated this could go many months in the future. And there are going to be questions about how that is funded. Kind of need Congress's approval. And today there was a vote in the U.S. Senate in which Congress would have to approve further or future military interventions in Venezuela. The president was not happy that bill got a lot of Republican votes. Congress is trying to reclaim some of its power here. Talking about Venezuela, Greenland, or the island of Atlantis. If there's going to be a military intervention, Congress is to approve of these things. And they believe they've been circumvented and shut out. And Greg and Jess, Congress has been shut out and circumvented an awful lot this year. here's a hill they seem to want to die on. They don't want to be circumvented on matters of military.
There's so much talk about what's happened and what the Trump administration wants right now. And I also feel like we can't forget about the people in Greenland. I mean, most of these people don't want to be American. Isn't that correct?
They are Danish constituents to a degree. I mean, it's in the circle of power of Denmark. And I would think that there's national pride everywhere in this world. If they wanted to be overtaken by America, I think you may be hearing more from them about that. And I certainly haven't heard a popular demand or mandate coming from Greenland. They want this. The argument from the administration hasn't been that the people of Greenland need us to liberate or improve their lives. It's been quite strategic that we need it for our national security. I'm not sure that argument goes over well with the people of Greenland, who one would have to imagine this time of year are really in the thick of it because it's January in Greenland.
Yeah, I think I was reading, it was on CBS News. There was a poll conducted a year ago that showed 85% of people in Greenland did not want to be part of the U.S. That says something.
It's a big number. There's no doubt about that. You mentioned it as part of national security. Is that the chief reason? Are there other reasons why the U.S. would have interest in the world's largest island?
I mean, there are always going to be resources that presumably the United States would use, if not want. But it's been pretty consistent, Greg. They're making this argument that it's for national security concerns and our national security interests that we have Greenland. Based on the threat from Russia, based on the issues of the Northern Atlantic. And they've been unequivocal about that, but that's not swaying public opinion in a noticeable way. And it feels to some here in Washington like a provocative thing to say to deflect attention from elsewhere. The Greenland card seems to get played when other things are happening.
Scott, I'm going to ask you a question, and don't get mad at me here, because I feel like we have made you superhuman, because you just have all this incredible information. You're a fantastic reporter, and you also have all of this amazing knowledge of R&B. But yesterday, we normally have you yesterday, and you were going home sick. And I want to ask about that, because the flu is just absolutely everywhere. Everybody seems to be sick. Are you doing better? How are you doing? Are you okay?
I'm feeling much better. Thank you. Everybody in my family has it. I've been bulletproof so far. I had what happens to us when we get older. They don't warn you about this. Your teeth just freaking break on nothing nowadays.
Yeah.
Like when you get past a certain age, like those things are
as
fragile as a Fabergé egg. It just came out at lunch.
Oh,
so
no.
We didn't think that was gonna make me TV friendly for the rest of the
oh,
day.
Goodness.
If I was missing one of those.
Was
things.
It a
we're back. We're back at 100%.
A visible tooth, like one that would have shown up. Like if you had smiled at the end of a hit, it would have been like, whoa, what happened to Scott there?
Hell yes, and a lot of people wanted me to get photos before I got that thing fixed up, and I said no, I'm not doing that. I'm not gonna be that guy.
Nobody got a photo? Not one of your kids even?
No. I'm slick. Come on, man.
I would love to see that photo.
Well, quick dental work. Are you up and running? Did you have to get a denture? What happened?
I had a new crown. And thankfully, when you're the TV guy, the dentist is especially sympathetic to you and squeezes you into the calendar because he knows it's an occupational hazard, not just vanity.
He got you right in. Oh, that's great.
Is everybody feeling okay about Saturday night, or is everybody a little queasy about Saturday night?
It's
a rival.
Yeah, very interesting question. So the last time they met in the playoffs, the Packers won in Chicago to go to the Super Bowl. So stakes not quite as high, but still very high. Yeah. One season continues, one ends. I think the consensus is the Packers have outplayed the Bears in two games, both played relatively recently, but the Bears just have this way of hanging around. And when you think they're out of it, they're down, double digits in the fourth quarter with 6 minutes left, and all of a sudden the game is tied. Like they've got
it's really obnoxious, honestly.
They've got that level of magic to them this year that you can't deny. I do feel like the Packers are a better team, but both teams are not going to be full strength here. I think it'd be two good offenses and defenses that can be scored upon. Those games are hard to figure out.
Well, I'll say one thing without eating up too much of your time. They are a 7 seed and they are favored. That tells me all I need to know about what Green Bay is about. Yeah, they've got the medal and people know it.
Well, we will all be watching. I know you will be as well, Scott. I occasionally sent Scott text messages throughout the course of the season, mainly when Tucker Kraft was doing well. Then he went down and I sent Scott the "Oh no!" message.
Shoot. That was
the key to his fantasy team.
Yeah, there was a stream of obscenities, I think, I replied to you when that happened.
Yes, indeed. We will not share those on the air. Scott, always great to check in, and we'll do so again next week. Thank you.
Anytime.
You bet.
Be careful chomping into that dinner tonight, Scott.
Isn't that crazy? And teeth just fall out.
Shoot.
So this happens to my daughter, but she's, you know, just turned 11. And teeth just come popping out of her mouth left and right.
I'm happy he doesn't have the flu, though. And, and now that I think back to it, I mean, hindsight 2020, he did say I could do the hit tomorrow. And I remember thinking, let's just give him the day off. You know, he does so much for us. Let's just give him the day off. He's probably not going to feel better. I was all worried he had the flu.
Yeah, no, just
he's healthy.
Came
just
flying out of his
issue.
Mouth. All right, well, good enough.
A plastic tube, a marble, and 18 inches of frost. Three things that decide whether Wisconsin's loggers can haul heavier loads each winter. This month's Driver's Ed with Debbie. She's taking a look at Wisconsin's frozen road law.
Winter has sealed the northern half of Wisconsin under a hard, glassy crust. And that quiet transformation flips a surprising switch on our highways. It's called the Frozen Road Law. And according to Wisconsin DOT's Matt Thornton, it's a seasonal trade-off between industry and infrastructure.
It's kind of a win-win, I think, for both industry and roadways. The main idea behind it all is that we open roads to carry more weight in the timber industry and then those that haul our sand and salt products for winter maintenance activities. And it also protects our roadways from damage due to overweight loads.
But the whole system hinges on the depth of the freeze. 18 inches, that's the magic number. Enough to reach past the pavement and into the subgrade where the real support lives.
18 inches gets us below our base course layers that's below the pavement and then gets us down into our subgrade. So it gives us that buffer area to provide a stable foundation for the roadway.
And how do we know when we've hit that mark? With a tool that sounds like it was invented during a science fair road trip.
The way that it works is it's a giant plastic tube, something like 4 feet long, and it's filled with a liquid and there's a marble in it. And depending on where the frost level is, we'll push the marble down.
Across the state, those frost tubes, along with pavement sensors, are read twice a week all winter long. Once the frost is deep enough, logging trucks and haulers carrying winter road materials like salt and sand can go from the usual 80,000 pounds up to 98,000 pounds. But that privilege is reserved for just two industries. Not every semi gets to bulk up.
It really just applies to the two industries. It's to the logging industry hauling those select materials, and then it's also those hauling our abrasives and our sand and salt for winter maintenance activities. It's not across the board for all the trucking industry.
And no, even with frozen roads, tire chains don't suddenly get the green light.
I think that's a no-no across the board. In general, we try not to encourage chain usage on a regular basis unless it's a very specific situation.
But deep freeze doesn't guarantee stability. When temperatures swing, the ground can shift too, giving us the winter cousin to the summer pavement buckles, frost heaves.
Frost heaves, it's kind of one of those deals. The materials get so cold that they move and they have forces that create those frost heaves. We do experience those to some degree, I think, across the state. And so it is something that we watch for.
Since our climate, even within the state, can differ, Wisconsin is broken into five zones, and each region shifts into frozen road on its own schedule.
We try to group areas in the state that have very similar climate conditions so we can apply the law consistently within a region.
And like everything in winter, safety still rules the road. Even with frost in the ground, the freeze-thaw dance can create slick spots, especially overnight. So as winter keeps rewriting the rules, the best thing behind the wheel is simple. Stay alert, stay light on the pedals, and let the season lead the way. Debbie Lazaga, WTMJ News.
New numbers just released from the Milwaukee Police Department today show overall crime in the city is down. Robberies, rapes, burglaries, arsons, auto thefts, and aggravated assaults are all down by double-digit percentages. Carjackings in Milwaukee are down almost 50% compared to a year ago. Non-fatal shootings are down nearly 20%. Milwaukee Police Chief Jeffrey Norman.
Less people are getting their cars stolen. Less people are being carjacked. Less people being robbed. Less people are getting injured. As a community, we need to acknowledge that we are doing all the work to help make these differences.
Two crimes are up, however: homicides and human trafficking. Human trafficking in Milwaukee is up 3% over the year. Homicides are up 8%. And as we all know, one homicide is too many.
In 2025, we saw a man brutally shoot and kill a disabled child. 13-year-olds are dying from guns that they were in their possession. A mother drives her teenage son to shoot and kill his sister over social media. Two pharmaceutical students with no criminal record kill one another over a dog's haircut. So as there is this discussion in regards to what the statistical numbers are, I'm talking about people. I'm talking about situations. And these tragedies cannot be made up. These are real occurrences and real members of our community.
Yeah, definitely. You can't forget the people. Now, nationally, homicides were down last year. So while it's fantastic news to see crime overall down in the city of Milwaukee, there is still work to do when it comes to homicides in the city. Chief Norman also talked about guns being a problem in Milwaukee.
Firearms are used in 89% or 126 of the homicides in our community. Unacceptable numbers. And I know that there was a 57% increase in juvenile homicide suspects last year. The youngest being 13 years old.
This is a story that impacts more than just people who live in Milwaukee. Like, you might hear, okay, the crime numbers in Milwaukee are out. Well, if you don't live in Milwaukee, you might say, why do I care? But this does. I mean, it impacts a lot of people. It impacts anyone who comes here to work or to visit. And it also impacts our city's narrative. I know some people might focus on the homicide numbers being up, and I get that. But don't forget that these numbers show overall crime is down. Sometimes people in the burbs, they find out I live downtown in downtown Milwaukee, and they're like, oh, you do? Do you like it? Like, they kind of question it.
Yeah.
And I love it. I feel safe for the most part. I'm also smart about my surroundings, and it is a city, right? Milwaukee is a city. Few cities are immune to crime. But we have a lot going for us in Milwaukee, from great theater to delicious restaurants, fun sports, unique shops, you name it. Overall crime being down in the city is another step forward.
Yeah, the carjacking numbers are the one that really stood out to me because it seemed like for years the penalties for carjacking were just far inferior to other states. And it almost like it was a game, right? You'd steal a car and drop it off somewhere and police weren't going to chase you.
It was a game for some of these kids, remember?
It was just ridiculous. So several bills were signed into law over the past few years, including a new law. It's part of Wisconsin Act 10, which created a specific carjacking section as part of the state's criminal code. So previously, those crimes were often charged as operating a vehicle without the owner's consent. What does that mean, right? A little fine and then you're off and running. Well, now you've got maximum prison sentences enforcing with these type of crimes as well. You could serve prison time for it. So I'm not surprised to see the carjacking numbers dip. And criminals pay attention to this stuff. They know what they can get away with, how they can push the limits, and things that they can't. Now, I'd like to see this continue downward over the next 3 years, right? I mean, it's great to have a decrease. To me, sometimes this feels like when you talk about ratings in the NFL, oh, ratings are down. Well, yeah, but they're still like the three highest rated programs of the year. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
I hear you.
You want to see a downward trend here continue. And this is the start of it. That's great. But it has to continue on the decrease.
Yeah, you certainly want it to be a trend without a doubt. But I think when you hear total violent crime is down 22%, that's significant. It's not like it's down 2% and, oh, well, you know, just, he just had a couple numbers. Carjacking's down 49%, nearly 50%. Non-fatal shootings down nearly 20%. Property crimes decreased 15%. Yeah, it's a big deal. It matters. But also, we can't forget those homicides and all the people involved in that. And also, human trafficking. That is a big deal. A lot of people don't realize it's happening, but it does happen right here in our city.
We'll continue to follow those numbers. And we'll keep track of this and kind of put it together in a chart to see where things go in 2026, 27. And beyond. It's 2:51 here on WTMJ. We'll wrap up the program with some final thoughts after this. Well, CES is in full swing in Las Vegas. Literally thousands of announcements coming out of Las Vegas this week. And some of the most important announcements from NVIDIA, the computer chip manufacturer providing the hardware that underpins much of the AI race. And it's showing up everywhere. Everything from toothbrushes to bird feeders.
Halo by YBrush is a sonic toothbrush that cleans your teeth in just 20 seconds and uses artificial intelligence and gas sensors to analyze breath biomarkers, which can detect over 300 health conditions, including early stage diabetes and liver disorders. BirdFee is introducing AI-powered smart bird feeders equipped with an 8-megapixel camera, which at 120 frames per second can still the blur of a hummingbird's wings, capturing a moment too fast for the human eye. And Tombot's Jenny is a lifelike robotic Labrador retriever that mimics the movements and responses of a puppy to support seniors living with dementia or mild cognitive impairment and others coping with anxiety, loneliness, autism, and PTSD. Covering CES 2026 in Las Vegas, I'm Holland Cook.
And so a good snapshot here is sort of like the practical sort of uses. I mean, you could envision yourself brushing your teeth and you get a little alert on your phone saying you might want to check out a doctor because of X, Y, and Z.
Or you might want to go back to that too. Yeah, right. It needs a little more.
Right. Got a little candy in your diet. The bird feeder thing, I've seen similar ideas, but the cameras have been just okay. I've not bought one myself. They're pretty expensive, to be honest, so that technology exists. But then the idea of a robot dog for those dealing with early onset dementia and how that could potentially be your therapy animal, for lack of a better term, was kind of something interesting as well. So practical uses of AI in technology being revealed this week at CES.
I took note of that as well, because the robot dog for people with dementia, because something that I've seen a lot at my stepdad's memory care facility, he doesn't do it, but there are some people there who they walk around with baby dolls. And if you have not had dementia touch your family closely, it might seem kind of strange that these older people are walking down with a baby doll, right? And they're almost acting like it's their child. But it is it's a comfort to them. So I can imagine how that dog would help as well. Something also that I saw at CES that was revealed this week, I really like this one. No time for an eye appointment. They have a walk-up iBot kiosk that might be the solution. So you go up, you look at the kiosk, basically, and it's examining your eyes as though an eye doctor would. I love it. And if that kiosk doesn't give you the puff of air or that real bright light that goes by scanning your eyes, I would love it. I might take up the kiosk.
The puff is annoying. There's no doubt about
that. The puff. In fact, I like the puff better these days than I used to. I used to hate the puff. Now I don't really mind the puff. I just like brace myself for puff. Like, it's coming. It's coming. Oh, okay. There it is. Now I don't like that bright, so bright light that sweeps by. No thanks.
And plenty more on tomorrow's program, including a preview of the Packers and Bears this Saturday night from Chicago. Looking forward to rounding out the week with some Packers-Bears discussion. Looking forward to Wisconsin's afternoon news with John and Julia. It begins in just minutes here on WTMJ.